Lecture 2, The Neolithic Revolution.
This session focuses on the rise of agriculture in human history and uses it as a focal point for developments prior to that that we need to know, but also particularly as a framework for developments that will occur after agriculture is introduced. Now, this is a choice. I mentioned in the previous lecture that world historians often are eager to find earlier origins, and that can involve pushing back the attention well before agriculture. David Christian, in his fascinating book, Maps of Time, spends about a third of the book before he gets to the emergence of any version of the human species at all. So he integrates world history with the evolution of the Earth itself, and this is fine. Obviously, also, you can spend an immense amount of time, and many people do, on the early developments of the species, and these nuances obviously fade if you focus, as I do, on agriculture as the first cut. But choices have to be made, and I think this gets us off to a satisfactory start. Agriculture began to be introduced to the human experience around 9000 BCE, and I'll come back to these dates in a moment. Prior to that time, from the emergence of the human species, say 2.5 million years ago, though the date keeps getting pushed back as new discoveries are made, from about 2.5 million years ago until about 11,000 years ago, the human species was involved in hunting and gathering economies, in which, for the most part, males of the species would participate in hunts, and females would be responsible for gathering seeds and grains, often generating more caloric value than the more boastful men did in the process. This long period between the early emergence of the species and the rise of agriculture raises, I think, three important points that even in our shorthand version need some attention. First of all, obviously, is the fact of evolution itself, not as a debating point, but simply as an understanding that between 2.5 million years ago, or a little earlier, and about 100,000 years ago, the human species went through a variety of evolutionary phases in a number of different parts of the world. The species originated in East Africa. Early on, the species, early versions of the species migrated to different parts of the world. A large number of human species were generated over time. Most of them disappeared well before the emergence of Homo sapiens sapiens because of adverse conditions, competition from other species. We obviously don't always know why. But about 100,000 years ago, Homo sapiens sapiens emerged. That is the species to which we all belong. And from that point onward, which included, by the way, soon thereafter, the introduction of what some sociobiologists call the speech gene, which greatly facilitated human speech compared to earlier versions and therefore facilitated the emergence of more formally organized human societies, etc. From that point onward, there have been no major evolutionary changes in the human experience. Sociobiologists would quarrel with this a little bit. There have certainly been some developments, but we remain the same basic species that emerged in East Africa also about 100,000 years ago. So world history that begins with the emergence of agriculture obviously doesn't pay a lot of attention to the niceties of the evolutionary experience, but this looms as an important background. Second datum, and very familiar to those of us who had brief grade school exposure to some version of world history, it became pretty clear early on that the human species, well before the emergence of Homo sapiens sapiens, was a tool-using animal. It's not the only species that uses tools. Some of the great apes do. But the human species became particularly adept initially at finding tools that would be suitable for hunting or for gathering or whatever, or as weapons of war. And ultimately, particularly with the Mesolithic and the Neolithic eras, 12,000 BCE, and then around 8,000 BCE. Tool use became increasingly deliberate. In other words, instead of simply finding tools, people became capable of making them, fashioning rocks, fashioning wood objects to make better weapons, better tools, even primitive boats. And they also, as part of this tool use, or at least I think it's a logical extension, began to be capable of domesticating certain kinds of animals. Initially the dog, and before the advent of agriculture, also some other species, including in some parts of the world, the horse. So, evolution, but evolution that produced Homo sapiens sapiens, and then, at least for a time, tapered off in terms of severe impact. Tool use, these are points, obviously, that set a framework for the emergence of agriculture itself, help us better understand the species whose history we're studying. The third pre-agricultural development is, in some ways, particularly crucial to world history, and that is the massive experience of migration. Homo sapiens sapiens, again, originated in East Africa, but after some thousands of years, began to pour out into other regions and ultimately around the world, as had earlier versions of the species as well. The reasons for migration were very simple. Hunting and gathering societies require a lot of space. It's been estimated, obviously depends a bit on the region, on an average they need 2.5 square miles per person. So even a modest population growth will force a group of hunter-gatherers to move a little farther to seek new space. And ultimately, this process extends so that the species will push out of the region altogether into other parts of the world. By 25,000 BCE, in other words, just 27,000 years ago, the species Homo sapiens sapiens had located in virtually every place in the world that is currently inhabited. Exceptions include, at that point, New Zealand, some of the other Pacific islands, Bermuda, but otherwise the species was in small numbers almost everywhere. It had crossed to Australia. At the point when it did so, the landmass in Southeast Asia extended much closer to what is now Australia, much farther into the Indian Ocean than is now the case, so the sea passage was relatively modest. As is more familiar still, people crossed into the Americas around over an ice bridge that connected Siberia with Alaska. This occurred earlier than had been originally estimated. Seems to have occurred at least 25,000 years ago, maybe earlier than that. But again, by 25,000 years ago, there were peoples in the Americas. There were obviously peoples in Africa where the species originated. People spread throughout much of Asia, in Australia, Europe, etc. Okay? This means that human history begins at a point when the species is widely dispersed. I mentioned in my earlier lecture, one of the key tensions in world history is the balance between the local and the connected. Well, we begin with the pretty local. People were spread out in small numbers and inevitably reacting to local environmental conditions reacting to accident formed intensely important local cultures, local institutions, and this would set the basis for the local, the more regional aspect of the human identity, which again remains important today. Now, the local shouldn't be overdone. There were language groupings that united people in larger elements, lots and lots of different specific languages, but a far smaller number of basic language groupings. And that's a connection that obviously we need to remember that modifies the local. But the species begins extremely dispersed. About 12,000 years ago, roughly 9,000 BCE, there were at most 5 to 10 million people in the world as a whole. Very small number, very widely dispersed, and that's sort of the framework within which agriculture was introduced. There are a couple of other ingredients that could be added to the story. One of the things that's been particularly interesting as we talk about both migration and evolution, and to some extent even tool use, is the debate about how different species interacted, different human species interacted in the process before Homo sapiens sapiens emerged triumphant. It turns out that Homo sapiens sapiens coexisted with other human species like Neanderthals for a longer period than we realized. Their advantage over Neanderthals may have had less to do with brain capacity, which is what Homo sapiens sapiens came to pride itself on, than actually with running ability. Neanderthals were excellent at long-distance, slow running, which was terrific when the issue at hand was the hunting of large game. When the issue shifted more to smaller animals that were swifter, Homo sapiens sapiens had a clear advantage. We still don't know the extent to which Homo sapiens sapiens simply outcompeted other species like Neanderthals, clubbed them to death — the species obviously was violent from the outset — or intermarried with them. Some of you may have more Neanderthal in you than you recognized. It's an interesting process and simply serves as an illustration of the complexity of some of the developments that prefigured agriculture. Okay, agriculture. Want to talk here about when it was introduced, the complexities of its introduction, because unfortunately human species did not do this in a tidy fashion, the implications for the future, and the implications about what kind of attitude one takes to major historical developments of this sort. There's no question, first point, that the introduction of agriculture, what is sometimes called the Neolithic Revolution, was one of the key changes in the human experience. Some would argue one of literally the two key changes, other than the emergence of the species itself, the other one being the replacement of agricultural economies with industrial economies. Whether that degree of emphasis is justified or not, this is a big deal change, and one of our tasks today is to talk about why it's such a big deal. Okay, agriculture was invented at least three different places separately, and probably more. The first invention occurred in the northern Middle East Black Sea region, associated with the domestication of wheat and barley. It probably occurred there because of changes in animal supply. Agriculture was almost certainly, though of course we don't know this for sure, was almost certainly introduced by women, because as gatherers they had been the ones who probably noticed, well, if you dropped some seeds in the ground, a little later something else happened. This may have been a mistake on their part, as we'll discuss later, but they were almost certainly responsible for the development initially. The second invention of agriculture was around rice. Occurred in South China and the continental part of Southeast Asia, about 7,000 BCE. The third clear separate invention was the domestication of corn or maize in Central America, beginning about 5,000 BCE. And there were probably other separate inventions. Probably agriculture was separately invented in sub-Saharan Africa, possibly also in northern China. We simply don't know. But at least there were three separate cases at widely dispersed intervals. So again, this is not a chronologically tidy development. We can talk about the emergence of agricultural society from about 9,000 BC onward, but we have to recognize that this was true only in some parts of the world. Everywhere when agriculture was introduced, it gradually spread, and ultimately, certainly by 5,000 BCE, was becoming the most common economic system for the largest number of people in the world. But 2 points. One, it did not spread as rapidly as we might imagine, given the presumed advantages that this system had over hunting and gathering, advantages that we will make clearer a little later on. It spread slowly because contacts among peoples, although they did exist, contacts were themselves gradual, and there were simply long periods of time in which agriculture could be flourishing in one region. Another region as close as 1,500 miles away would simply be totally unaware of it. The spread of agriculture, for example, from the northern Middle East into northwestern Europe — the distances are not inconsiderable, but they're also not immense — this took literally thousands and thousands of years. So slowness of diffusion is a factor. Second, equally important, not all regions were equally suitable for agriculture, either temporarily or permanently. They might be particularly heavily forested. They might be arid. All sorts of factors might induce a people either to delay their adoption of agriculture or simply to avoid it altogether, at least until the modern period. Particularly important are cases in which hunting and gathering economies persisted But even more important still, cases in which an alternative economic system based on herding domesticated animals, a nomadic economic system, long prevailed over any introduction of agriculture. Nomadic societies were particularly important in the Middle East, in Africa, in some parts of the Americas, but above all in Central Asia, where they will play a crucial recurrent role in world history, as we will see later on. So, two obvious points. Despite the importance of agriculture, which I'm going to return to momentarily, agriculture did not conquer the whole world, and agriculture spread more slowly than we might imagine, partly because of lack of knowledge, partly because of particular climatic and soil conditions, but also partly because there were actually some pretty good reasons that peoples might not want to adopt agriculture. Agriculture, for example, for the most part, involves settling down. Hunting and gathering people might treasure their capacity to move around. There is one version of agriculture, slash and burn, that allows people to farm for a couple years and then move on, but it's not the dominant form. Agriculture might seem repellent to societies in which males were accustomed to boasting about their hunting exploits. So there could be gender reasons for delaying, if not avoiding, agriculture altogether. We do not know the debates that must have occurred in groups and among individuals as the agricultural alternative presented itself as to whether they should adopt it or not. Ultimately, obviously, agriculture would prevail in most of the world where it's possible at all, and certainly in the largest population concentrations, but it was not an automatic or uniform choice, which is a caution about oversimplifying the agricultural story. When agriculture was introduced, it involved really massive changes in the human experience. First, it changed the nature of work, and here the change is counterintuitive. Agriculture involves more work, particularly for men, in most cases, than hunting and gathering does. It's been estimated that hunting and gathering, on average, it'll be varied depending on the intensity of the hunt. Hunting and gathering involves about 3 hours of work per day. Agriculture, in season, involved much, much more. So agriculture redefines and, on the whole, increases the work expectations of human society. Agriculture massively redefined gender relations. In most hunting and gathering societies, as noted, men did the hunting, women did the bulk of the gathering, but because both groups contributed extensively to the food supply, women were usually given a reasonably prestigious place. It was separate from men, maybe a little inferior. But in many hunting and gathering societies, they participated in governing decisions. They were not treated as a systematically inferior part of the human species, despite the fact that our images of cavemen frequently emphasize club-wielding men lording it over women. Those images are inaccurate. In agricultural societies, however, patriarchal systems came to predominate everywhere. As we'll see, they might take different specific forms, but all agricultural societies introduced male dominance over women, older male dominance over younger males, and this became a characteristic of agricultural societies that still affects the human experience even several centuries past agricultural predominance. Why did this happen? The most obvious reason was that agriculture both permitted and required an expansion of the birth rate. With more secure food supplies, and that's the crucial advantage of agriculture over hunting and gathering, agriculture does not guarantee adequacy. Agricultural societies would experience periodic famines, grain failure, crop failures, etc. But agriculture does produce more abundant and more predictable food supplies than hunting and gathering does, and that permits larger numbers of children to be born. Quite literally, in agricultural societies, women deliberately limited their lactation period, during which it's difficult, though not impossible, to conceive a new child. In hunting and gathering societies, women actually breastfed their children for upwards of 3 to 5 years. This was both to provide food supply for young children in a society in which food could otherwise be scarce, and was designed to limit the birth rate, because hunting and gathering societies simply could not afford too many children. They moved around too many young children, would be a burden, etc. In agriculture, the greater abundance of food, without overdoing that abundance, permitted a new pattern of child rearing and an increase in the per capita birth rate. But also, agricultural societies needed these children because they needed additional hands, additional labor service, in order to run the agricultural enterprise itself. In most agricultural societies, the family and the workers within the family, men, women, and children, were essential to maintain the farming operation. Okay, with this change in birth rate, obviously, the differentiation between men and women tended to increase. Women had additional periods in which they were carrying children, dealing with young children, responsible for upbringing, and it was difficult for them to continue to serve as a major economic supplier for the family, difficult though not always impossible. And men increasingly, in most agricultural societies, assumed the role of principal cultivator of the crucial food crops. This economic differentiation, responsible for patriarchy, was fundamental to the agricultural experience and, again, greatly differentiated it from what had gone before. Childhood, of course, also changed. In hunting and gathering societies, children had had relatively few functions until they reached their early teen years. In agricultural societies, childhood and work became closely associated, and the virtues enjoined upon children, including obedience, tended to follow this shift in role as well. Okay, so with the advent of agriculture, even though it occurs at different times in different places, one sees a different kind of human experience emerge, different sets of relationships between different parts of the human community. The advent of agriculture, including its messiness, its uneven adoption, and uneven chronology, the advent of agriculture raises some really interesting questions about human progress. The most tempting thing to say, and I think this comes through in a good bit of grade school stuff about basic human history, the most obvious thing to say is, well, with agriculture, human beings were poised for further progress. And in some senses, that may be so. But it's also crucial to recognize that agriculture brought with it a number of very clear liabilities. And a few historians have argued that with agriculture, a downward spiral was established for the human species that we're still engaged in today. I wouldn't press it that far, but it's worth thinking about. What were the drawbacks? Drawback number one, obviously, agriculture introduced new kinds of inequality into the human experience, particularly between men and women. Drawback number two, as human societies began to settle down into clustered communities, disease possibilities increased. So agricultural societies were exposed to more epidemic disease than hunting and gathering peoples were. Agricultural societies also, almost by definition, were capable of altering the local environment in ways that hunting and gathering societies could almost never do. They might have some impact on animal numbers, but fundamental ecological shifts really awaited the advent of agriculture. And in some early agricultural communities, environmental damage actually emerged quite quickly and in some cases actually destroyed the communities involved, at least in that particular region. So it's important to see downsides to agriculture, lest we adopt an unduly rosy, progressive view of human history. And it's important to realize that some of these downsides actually affected the willingness to adopt agriculture itself, which, as I said, was not exactly a uniform given in the human response. But agriculture clearly had a few advantages, and this is why it spread. One of its advantages, and one historian has pointed this out not entirely frivolously, was it allowed the emergence of products that could be fermented to create alcohol. And this historian has suggested, I wouldn't press this too far, but it's sort of fun. This historian has suggested that one of the reasons that men were willing to adopt agriculture, despite the fact that it took them away from the hunt was because it allowed them to get bombed. And indeed, we will see early on that some of the first things agricultural societies did, for example, with the introduction of writing, was to write down recipes for the fermentation of grain. Okay, more systematically and more seriously, agriculture allowed, as we've already suggested, a significant improvement in food supply that in turn allowed families to have more children, slash probably engage more frequently in sexual activity, and certainly allowed populations to expand. Whereas the population of the world at the eve of agriculture was probably at most 10 million people, quite possibly fewer than that. Within a few thousand years, the human population around the world had risen to 100 million or even more, and some of the great agricultural societies would be poised for population figures even in advance of these levels. Agriculture did not produce world populations at the level we're accustomed to today, but they generated populations that were vastly larger than had been true in the human condition up to that point. Agricultural societies, agricultural economies, always had some limitations, and as we begin to turn to a long period of human history, between about 9,000 BCE until literally 300-400 years ago, a long period, it's important to remember that these conditions will be true to some degree almost everywhere, except in those cases where agriculture didn't prevail at all. We've already seen some limitations, or at least some characteristics, in terms of gender relationships, relationships between parents and children. Okay, as agricultural families moved to birth levels that would usually involve a desire for between 5 and 7 children born for a family. Right? Agricultural economies also always were constrained by limitations in the amount of food that a given agricultural worker could generate. Except in a very few hothouse regions, even the most advanced agricultural economies, even 500 years ago, as recently as 500 years ago, required about 8 agricultural workers for every 10 people in the population. In other words, agricultural economies, although they greatly facilitated food supply, were always constrained by the extent to which 80% or more of the population had to be engaged primarily in agriculture. And this is important to remember. It's a constraint even on societies whose achievements we will soon marvel at. A constraint because it limited the amount of taxation that could be levied. It limited the size of cities to 20% of the population at the most, and frequently less than that. Russian agricultural society, for example, only in quite modern times generated an urban level that was more than 10% of the population. This constraint of resources, this constraint in terms of growing patterns, is a crucial feature to remember about agricultural societies generally. Agricultural societies would also, understandably enough, generate some cultural emphases. I think it's probably forcing it to say agriculture immediately produced an appropriate cultural response, because polytheistic systems that had been developed in hunting and gathering societies continued into agricultural societies for a considerable period of time. But obviously, over time, agriculture would encourage new attention to the spring season as the planting season, new attention to divine forces responsible for creativity. So you need to look, along with resource constraints and family patterns, one needs to look to agriculture as a set of cultural parameters as well, and that will crop up in our later discussions also. The crucial feature of agriculture, along with the drawbacks that have to be remembered, the crucial feature of agriculture was its capacity to lead to population increase and its capacity to generate not massive, but discernible surpluses, which could be used for purposes other than agriculture itself. Agriculture indeed imposed some needs for some people who could be at least partially freed from agriculture proper in order to do some other things. Most obviously, for example, agricultural societies depended on the development of manufacturing of certain kinds of containers that could hold food and seed from one season to the next. So not surprisingly, although this isn't immediate, one of the first areas where agricultural societies generated technological advance was in the area of pottery making, because you needed these things simply to maintain your agricultural economy. So without overdoing the progressive emphasis, because again, the drawbacks have to be remembered, agriculture is involved with population growth, the generation of surpluses, and this could lead, and this is our point in the next session, this could lead to yet additional developments in the human experience, including cities, including other kinds of technological advance, and that could be, as we will discuss, the next stage in the story.